I see some people that would be traveling, at least two, and maybe a guest or two. Think about it. We'll discuss it later. We're reading from Isaiah 50, verse 10. Who among you fears the Lord and obeys the word of his servant? Let the one who walks in the dark, who has no light, trust in the name of the Lord and rely on their God. But now, all you who light fires and provide yourselves with flaming torches, go, walk in the light of your fires and of the torches you have set ablaze. This is what you shall receive from my hand. You will lie down in torment. Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness and who seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which you were cut, and to the quarry from which you were hewn. Look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah, who gave you birth. When I called him, he was only one man, and I blessed him and made him many. The Lord will surely comfort Zion, and will look with compassion on all her ruins. He will make her deserts like Eden, her wastelands like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the sound of singing. Listen to me, my people. Hear me, my nation. Instruction will go out from me. My justice will become a light to the nations. My righteousness draws near speedily. My salvation is on the way, and my arm will bring justice to the nations. The islands will look to me and wait in hope for my arm. Lift up your eyes to the heavens, look to the earth beneath. The heavens will vanish like smoke, the earth will wear out like a garment, and the inhabitants die like flies. But my salvation will last forever, my righteousness will never fail. Hear me, you who know what is right, you people who have taken my instruction to heart. Do not fear the reproach of mere mortals, or be terrified by their insults, for the moth will eat them up like a garment, the worm will devour them like wool, but my righteousness will last forever, my salvation through all generations. Awake, awake, arm of the Lord, clothe yourself with strength, awake as in the days gone by, as in generations of old. Was it not you who cut Rahab to pieces, who pierced that monster through? It's Rahab, excuse me, there was no het. I'm reading from English. Was it not you who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep, who made a road in the depths of the sea so that the redeemed might cross over? Those the Lord has rescued will return. They will enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. That's a very majestic passage. Oh, and we do have a recording. Look at that.
It's a Sheila.
When did that start?
At the beginning.
At the beginning.
Okay. Wonderful. So that is a grand, sweeping passage. It did refer to the fathers, look to Abraham from whom you were cut, the rock from whom you were quarried. And of course, that does provide a link back to the book of Genesis, which is what we've been following through in the Parasha. So at this point, I would like us to turn there, and even though there were wonderful themes to follow up there, if we followed them up, we would not do our Genesis. So we're going to go to Genesis, and there are quite a few themes there that I find this a very engaging passage. We're right in the middle of the Joseph story. We're right at kind of the heart of
chapter 42.
When we get to see, this passage we're going to look at lets us look into the thoughts and motives of what's going on. And Whether we like what we see or not, it does present something for us to engage with in our own lives. So, Genesis 42:18. Okay, then I'll give this to you. And was my prayer included in this? No, so let's do, let me do all that. So it's the 30th of July, 2016. It's the Narkis Bible study. We just read the Haftarah reading that goes with our triannual parasha reading. And now we're coming to the foundation, to the parasha reading itself, Genesis 42, 18 through 43, 13. And we're going to ask the Lord to make us receptive to His Word. Lord, we do come before You as children. We follow these words, and we receive them as words from You. And as we do that, we know that we need Your wisdom to know how to process them. Your words are true, and some of the deeds in this story are despicable. And so we pray that we would be true servants, that we would be able to see Your purposes, Your intention, and that we would trust You in our lives to do the right and to deal with the people in our families and around us according to Your will. And we pray in Jesus' name.
Amen.
So, if you remember, the story left off with Joseph and his brothers in Egypt. I'm going to say a couple verses to bring up from last week, 42, 6, and 7. Now Joseph was the governor of all the land and the person who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. And as soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them. But he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. Okay. Now, he recognized them. He recognized the brothers. Do you remember? I wasn't here for some of the earlier stories, so I'm going to ask you, does this wordplay ring a bell with something that was maybe discussed a couple months ago?
Well, the word remembers. Are you talking about the word remembers?
No, I'm talking about the word to recognize.
Oh, recognize.
Hakevna. What are some of the recognizes that are in this story? The Joseph story at large.
Did the brothers recognize him from far off when he came in with his beautiful coat?
I don't know if it says they recognized at that point. That's even earlier. We are going to go back and read a few verses, so I'm sorry?
Dreams.
Yes.
What about Pharaoh recognizing the qualities?
It says they saw him in the distance. This is English, so it doesn't tell me if it, you know, the English might have used the word saw, and the Hebrew may have said lehakir, so let me just run back here in Hebrew. I'll be with you in a second. Vayiruoto merahok. It's just the simple word. It's not lehakir. So I'll tell you the one I'm thinking of. At the end of chapter 37, they've sold Joseph. They go to the father and they bring the ketonet pasin to the father and they say hakerna. Yes? You remember?
The body.
Okay. And
what does he recognize? The coat.
Do you recognize this coat? Okay, hakerna. And the reason I bring that up is because in the next chapter, in 38, we have the story of Judah and Tamar. It comes into this Joseph story. It intervenes. And, well, I was planning to read it, so maybe I'll read it now. We still haven't read the Parasha that we're going to read, but let me read from chapter 38 what I think you need to know when we read chapter 42. Again, I'm repeating, at the end of 37, the brothers say to the father, Hakerna, recognize this garment. Then we have this interlude, chapter 38, and it says, Now Judah left his brothers and went down to stay with a man of Adullam named Hira. And he met the daughter of a Canaanite man named Shua, and he married her and made love to her, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son named Er. And so he has these sons, and of course they grow up, and one of them marries Tamar, and Judah doesn't give his third son to Tamar because his other sons die, and Tamar does a trick on him in a dual sense of the English word trick. Maybe not all of you know that idiom. Some of you are nodding your heads. Okay, you do know that idiom. You know the idiom. Maybe, okay. But maybe somebody raised in the land doesn't know the idiom trick. It's the job of a prostitute. Oh, what she does at night, she will do
a trick. She turns tricks.
She turns tricks.
Okay.
Well, Tamar is going to trick Judah doubly.
Yes.
I'm making a play on words because the Bible is making play on words here. Not that that play, but other plays. And so at the end of chapter 38, they discover that Tamar is pregnant, and she says, take these symbols to Judah and tell him Hakerna. And there is this phrase that links the end of chapter 37 with Joseph, the brothers, and the father to Judah and Tamar. And you have to also remember, who was it that suggested to do that?
Is that Judah?
Back with the brothers, there were two brothers that did some talking in chapter 37. Remember, at first they said, let's do away with him. Remember?
And Reuben comes along.
And then Reuben comes along and says, you know, we shouldn't lay a hand on him. Let's put him in the pit. He was thinking of coming back later. And of course, if they just left him in a pit without a way out, he would have died there, but he would have died a natural death. They themselves wouldn't have actually struck him with a rock or sword or something. So Reuben comes in and says, let's not lay a hand on him. Let's put him in the bowl. And then while they're eating, they see the Midianites, Ishmaelim, passing by. And then it's Judah who comes up with the plan. Why should we just kill him for nothing? Let's get some money out of it. And so they follow that. And so it's Judah that is the instigator of this turn in the story where they take the bloody coat to the father and say, Hakerna. And so it's Judah who gets this poetic justice where Tamar says to Judah, Hakerna, recognize these tokens. This is the man responsible. And of course, he recognizes that and says, you know, she's more righteous than I am. Now, at the end of that, listen, there were two twins. She gave birth. There's the thread. The scarlet, and said this one came out first, but he drew back his hand, and then the brother came out, so you've broken out, and she calls him Peretz, and his brother comes out, and she calls him Zerah. Okay, why did I read that story? One was to recognize this wordplay going on with Hakerna. Two was to recognize the time frame. We had this long interlude of Tamar. Now, how long does it take? He goes off, he gets married, he raises three children to marriageable age, and the third one grows up and doesn't get Tamar. So we've had some time, yes?
Yeah.
Some serious times from the time of Joseph. So Joseph gets sold into Egypt. We have this long story that goes through two generations. The children grow up, get married, and then Tamar ends up giving birth. So it's, I don't know how much time that would be, but I would say 20 years?
20 plus, 25 years. Yeah,
it's a good amount of time. Then we go back to Joseph, which is where we are now, and we're going to pick it up in chapter 42:18, but I wanted you to remember this, verse 8, and Joseph recognized his brothers, and they did not recognize him.
Who he killed?
Vayakir et Ahiv. Now we're going to pick up and begin our reading. And, dear me, I forgot which verse to start at.
18.
Yes. So, I'm reading from 42:18. He's put them in prison. Just before verse 18, he said, "You're spies." On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God." Wonder what they thought of that statement. "If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison, while the rest of you go and take grain back for your starving households."
And when he says God, it would have been an obvious thing for them to recognize that he's talking about the God of Israel, right? I mean, there wouldn't be a sense of a God that would be associated with Egypt, right? Or a universal.
Well, I've assumed this is what I said. That's why I said it's interesting. I fear God, and there's a double entendre there, because if you're one of this family of Abraham that are following Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, which is the actual name of God, people want to know what it is. Okay, it's Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. Nobody pronounces it anymore. But if you hear somebody give another name, it's not that. It's Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. Anyway, so there. And there's debate as to whether they had known that name yet already or not, but I think they did. And
but is that the name that he used?
I'm sorry?
It's not the name that he used, it says Elohim.
No, here it says Elohim, of course. And so I'm trying to get us to see, and this is good, I want us to see things through the eyes of the characters in the story, because that is the important part of this little chapter we're reading. So here they are, and they come down, and they meet this Egyptian ruler who says, "I fear God." And that can be a bit of a shame to them. It's like, wow, this guy is going to do right, and he's going to do justice because he fears God. You know, who are we? Well, think of what they've done. Think of the guilt they're carrying around. Think of the kind of life they're living. We just saw it back in chapter 38. Judah is not exactly a noble man. He is very much a man of the world and just trying to make things happen for himself.
But also there's all the guilt about what did happen to Joseph and how they lied to their father and the distress that the father
There are just said. Layers and layers of guilt that they've been trying to repress from their memory. And so here is this ruler of Egypt that says, "I'm going to do right because I fear God." And that must have hurt or hit because if they're part of the family of God, God's Spirit doesn't let us get away with things. That His Spirit is going to convict them. I suspect they felt something at that point. But what did they understand? I think they understood him to be referring to one of the Egyptian gods.
Oh, really?
That's what I think.
And so fear God.
Because he would have shown, he would have been in Egyptian dress.
Yeah.
They didn't recognize him. So he's in Egyptian dress. He's an Egyptian ruler.
He's talking through an interpreter.
He says, he's talking through an interpreter, and he says, I fear God, I'm going to do right. And they're going, whoa, this guy is a follower of who knows what kind of pagan system, and he's going to let that pagan system lead him to do right. That would convict them. Okay. What? It wouldn't matter if it's there or not. That would tell us the perspective of the writer of the story, but it wouldn't be what they would have heard.
Right. Okay.
Because, but let me turn to there. I might as well get my... There is a ha. Et ha Elohim ani yaveh.
Because you would think that if it was the Egyptian god, where it would be gods, right?
Well, not necessarily. Because a lot of these people in antiquity tended to sort of do one god at a time. So he may have been a protege of a particular temple in, or they may have thought he's a protege of a particular temple of an Egyptian god, part of a greater pantheon, and yet he's devoted to one.
Except it said fear God. That's not typically Hebrew.
I fear God?
I fear God.
Lo. No, fear, that is used a lot. Yes, that is used a lot in Hebrew.
Would it be any distinction between the followers of Yahweh and...
I don't think so.
The fear of God.
Well, the fact that it's personally impacting their life, maybe... See, what did Jonah say? What did the others say to Jonah? You people that have just read Jonah.
What God do you fear? And to cry out to your God, it says.
Yeah, but it doesn't use the word fear.
I need you at night.
Yeah, but it's still... Yeah. Oh, is that that? Yes. In a way, it doesn't really matter.
No.
If somebody says, I fear God and I'm going to do right... That in itself is enough to convict the person who's not doing right of, hey, that whether it's the God of Israel, whether it's a pagan God, whether it's whatever.
Good point.
This guy does better than we do.
Good. Okay, so let's go on from here.
Is what is right in the sight of the God of Israel isn't right in the sight of the Egyptian God, because there are societies that did child sacrifice and the sight of the God of Israel isn't.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't hear everything there. I got some echo.
Sometimes what's right with one religious system is not what's right.
That's
with
true.
That's also true,
that's
yes.
True.
What is right is not, in case this didn't pick up, what is right is not always the same within one system or another. But anyway, let us pick up here. He says, if you are honest men, Joseph speaking, let one of your brothers stay while the rest of you go and bring grain back to your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified and that you may not die. This they proceeded to do. They said to one another, surely we're being punished because of our brothers.
Brothers in plural. I've only got it in.
No, I'm sorry. I read brothers, but
yeah,
I see...
Yeah, they're talking about Joseph.
No, I misread. There's a footnote mark, and I read it as an S.
Okay. So their guilt is pretty obvious now.
Yes, because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life. So now we're getting a little more color back in the story. Remember in 37... You know, they do this negotiation and it just says they drew him up and sold him. But here we're getting more of the detail. Listen to that. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come to us. Can you think of that?
And we're talking about 25 years later.
Are we?
Yeah, we've just...
No, that story of Judah and Tamar went way off into the future, and now we've come back because Joseph is in Egypt.
I know. Joseph
hasn't been in Egypt that long.
So wait a second, how does that work?
Well, he's been there quite a long time.
He's been there at least 7 good years and a little bit more, but he hadn't been that long.
And he was in prison, and then he worked for a bit before he even got to prison.
How could Judah have done all those things in 20 years?
Whatever. They've been carrying a whole bunch of guilt for a long time.
They've been carrying guilt for a long time. Okay.
Let's fiddle about the years. But it's quite a long time.
Yes. Now, the number 37 strikes me. Does it say that Joseph was 37 somewhere? Why is this word 37?
Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. That's in 46.
Okay, that's
41, 46.
And I think earlier he had been 17. So it's been 13 years.
Yeah.
The point is that we're going back in time here.
Right.
This is not after Tamar gives birth.
I was muddled.
This goes back in time. We're going back to Egypt.
Right.
Thank you. So.
But I was just concerned about the level of guilt.
And that's what I want you to be concerned about today, because that's what makes this story so difficult to process.
Their guilt in the Torah, it says you shall not stand by your brother when your brother's blood is being shed, you must to stand by when that happened.
That's
and
right.
Here, not only did they stand by, but they shed the blood of themselves.
Yes.
So it's pretty heavy.
Yes. So we have a hard-heartedness that is remarkable. They are basically murderers. In their hearts, they're murderers. First, they plan to murder him, and then Reuben said, well, let's shy back from first-degree murder. Let's make it kind of a second-degree murder. And then Judah, the other brother, the two in chapter 37 that spoke were Reuben and Judah, and we're going to get Reuben in one verse here, but they were all murderers in their heart, and then Reuben got cold feet and Judah decided to turn it into prophet. So
we got it, Randy. But I remember a couple of weeks back, the whole thing about selling a brother into slavery is the equivalent of murder somewhere in Scripture. Mm. I've got it written down here, but I haven't got the text.
Well, anyway, they were all the equivalent of murderers, and they had no idea, of course, whatever happened to Joseph. Now, we're picking up at verse 22. Reuben replied. Remember Reuben? We've been talking about Reuben. Reuben is the one that said, put him in the pit. Let's not us be guilty. And now look what happens to his words of guilt. They're going to go up one notch. Reuben said, didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? And of course, what is sin? Sin is evil that creates a guilt and a weight against you that is now upon you. It's not just that you did something bad, but you've done something bad and the consequences of that now are on you. That's sin. So he said, didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Well, actually, they did listen. typical, people like to blame other people. You know, even if it's, if they've only got half a justification, they'll make a full justification out of it. Let's go on. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. They did not realize that Joseph could understand them since he was using an interpreter. So here is where we finally get the notification that he's speaking to them. They're not aware that he's understanding them. By the way, Egyptian and Canaanite, these people are, Joseph and his brothers are speaking Canaanite. That's the generic word for Hebrew. Hebrew, Moabite, Phoenician, these are all Canaanite. So they're speaking Canaanite, and Joseph is speaking Egyptian, and those are related, trying to say, what would they, what like, they're related sort of like English and Russian.
In other words, not very close at all.
They didn't understand a word of each other, but if you're a linguist, there actually is structural threads that go way, way back. They're all part of what is called the Afro-Asiatic family of languages, just like Russian and English are part of the Indo-European family of languages. Afro-Asiatic family of languages. But these are major different sections, and they're not related tight. It's not, we're not talking here about French and Spanish or Danish and Swedish. We're talking about English and Russian, just for the record. Okay? So he turned away from them and began to weep. Wow. Then he came back and spoke to them again. So the emotion that's in this story is put in the text. We are expected to be looking at the personal characterization and what they are going through internally, psychologically, in this passage. The one guilty for sin and murder, we must give an accounting for his blood. That shows you that they were looking at it as if he had been murdered.
Do they think that this whole famine and everything is because they murdered their brother?
I don't think they're thinking that. I don't know.
They think that they're in this situation because they murdered their brother.
They think this situation because they can already think ahead. What did we get into? We've got to go back and bring the younger brother down here. Who knows what will happen when we bring the younger brother down here? And so they're fearing for themselves and they're fearing for their younger brother because they're in a lose-lose. If they just leave and never go back,
they die.
Then they're leaving one of their brothers in Egypt. Whoever gets held as a hostage is left in slavery and dies. And if they bring their youngest brother back, maybe he dies. Maybe they all die. They don't know. So they're faced with a lose-lose situation that's horrible. They're going to have to risk one of themselves to be left behind, and then they may have to re-risk themselves and bring their youngest brother into the picture. I mean, and that's why they say, you know, we're having to give an accounting.
They're saying that we're in this situation because what we did to our brother.
Yes, they're seeing this as a
retribution.
Davar keneged midah keneged midah, measure for measure.
Measure retribution.
They're seeing this as a kind of divine retribution for what they did to a brother. What they did to a brother is now going to be brought on them, one of them as a brother, and then they're going to have to bring one more brother into it. So they saw that connection.
Randy, when I was reading it before, I got this thing about The whole story is about life and death. All these decisions about life and death. We're dying from the famine. What do we do from this famine? How are we going to get life in this situation? Where do we get the food? How do we save the situation? And it's always this incredible conflict between life and death.
Okay, well, let's keep reading through this passage to get to some of the other moral challenges.
Sheila has something.
Oh, Sheila?
Sheila, what did you say?
Just that they were, that they had another brother. Like, this time, when they sent Joseph, they got rid of him, but now one of them will be in the same position. Another
that's
person.
Right.
They
that's
him. They betray the brother and run. Then one of them will be in the same position.
Exactly. And when they and if they bring the other brother down, then they have no idea. Yes, so they're... And we're going to see that in just a few verses, that they very much are aware of that predicament, because we're going to have to ask another character question. So, we're at verse 25. Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to put each man's silver back in his sack, to give them provisions for the journey. And after this was done for them, they loaded the grain on their donkeys and left. So they're on their way back from Egypt. And if you remember, we mentioned it last week, it's probably a distance of about 2 weeks.
So who did they leave in prison?
What?
Who did they leave in prison?
Simeon.
Shimon. We'll get to that in just a second. And then we'll get a nice thing, the people of you that are doing Hebrew here that want to know about Hebrew discourse, we're going to have something interesting. Okay. At the place where they stopped for the night, one of them opened his sack to get feed for his donkey, and he saw his silver in the mouth of his sack. "My silver has been returned," he said to his brothers. "Here it is in my sack." And their hearts sank, and they turned to each other trembling, saying, "What is this that God has done to us?" Okay, why are they afraid?
They're dealing with God and not them.
Now they see that God is bringing the sin of one brother on them. They are charged with being spies, and now they're going to be charged with being thieves. It just gets worse. It's just, what has God done to us? With trembling, they speak to each other. Now, what I wanted to point out before we go on is how the writer characterizes this, and I'm going to ask a question and see.
Just before you go on, you had three things just now. First, murder, spies.
The brother,
you had three things.
The guilt,
murder, spies, thieves. Murder, spies.
Murder of the brother.
Very good. That's all right. I've done it. Got it.
Murder of the brother. Being accused of being spies and being accused of being thieves.
Yeah, very good.
Now, obviously, they haven't been accused of being thieves yet, as soon as they saw the silver in their bag, they knew that if they went back, they would be
accused of being thieves.
Accused of being thieves, absolutely, because they, obviously, when they do the accounting in the treasury, the account is going to come up short. Now, how short is it going to come up at this point?
10 times.
What?
10 bags of grain. Because one's in prison. Unless they protect...
Or, no. How many here opened their bag?
Just one.
Did
only
they
one.
All?
No, only one. I think.
Only one. We're going to get to it in a second. So far, only one has opened his bag, and they see that as a disaster. We've got another one coming. But, so that one person sees it and it's a disaster. Now, what I wanted to raise a question on is the way things have been going so far. We've had Reuben mentioned by name, and earlier we had Judah mentioned by name, and now we have Vayiftach Ha'ehad, and we have the one. It's not one, it's the one. And the one opened his bag and said...
Oh, yeah?
Yes, that's what it says.
Ha.
Ha. Ha. Ha. Ehad. Ha. Yahid. Ha. Miyuhad. Vidarshu Hazal Hu Levi. 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 Now, let's keep going. Have we?
Where do you get? Where's that?
We'll come to that in a second. Oh. Does it say? Did we read yet? That it's Shim. Yes, he had Shimon taken from them and bound before their eyes. So it doesn't say. This text here doesn't say one was one person, as if they didn't know who did it.
One of them.
It says the one.
Well, it doesn't say one of them either. But that's a translation. We've been over this. That's a translation just like English. It's not Asli.
David.
Asli means the original. The original. The original says El Ahad. The one. Now, and that's why the later when the rabbis were discussing this passage, saying what gives here. Now, this is a characterization. They didn't use a name, and that's important. But they refer to him as the one, and so if you remember, many of these brothers were born to different mothers. And so who was Shimon's brother? Levi. And so when it says the one opened up his bag, the rabbi said, well, of course, that would be the other, that would be Levi's, that would be Shimon's brother. So
interesting bit of logic.
What?
It's an interesting
idea. It's an interesting bit of logic, and the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, that's really not bad at all. I kind of like it.
They're from the same mother, and so one is in prison, Shimon's in prison.
In any case, it is strange. If you just wanted to say one of them, some one of them, you would say Ahad. But Ha-Ahad means a specific one of them. And that's taking the one to be a characterization, that when you use a description of a character instead of his name, you're changing his role, as it were, in the story. And so this apparently is a reference to Shimon's brother. Anyway, we can't prove it. I like that midrash. I think that midrash may actually be extracting the literal intention. Now, when they came to the father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told them all that had happened, and they said, the man who is lord over the land spoke harshly, treated us as though we were spying on the land. But we said to him, we're honest men. We're not spies. We lied through our teeth. That's between the lines. They are not honest men. Now, we were 12 brothers, sons of one father. One is no more. The youngest is now with our father in Canaan. And then the man who is lord over the land said to us, this is how I'll know whether you're honest men. Leave one of your brothers and take food to your starving households and go. So, did Joseph have compassion?
Yes.
Joseph had compassion. Now we're about to see another lesson in compassion. Remember, we just read where Joseph pleaded with them for his life, and they shut their heart. Remember a few verses ago? What kind of compassion is that? Think of what it would be like. You have a brother or sister, and they plead for their life, and without any problem at all, you could save their life, and you just close it up, and you've got murder in your heart. Okay. So Joseph has compassion. Now, Verse 34, but bring your youngest brother, and I'll know you're not spies but honest men, and I'll give your brother back to you, and you can trade in the land. And as they were emptying their sacks, there in each man's sack was his pouch of silver. And when they and their father saw the money pouches, they were frightened, as they should be. You know, it wasn't...
That's the first time I've seen that.
Yeah, me too.
It wasn't just one.
Yeah, I never seen that.
That was going to be the thief for all of them.
It's Levi who discovers it, and then they.
And then they all. Then they.
Wow.
Then now they all. It's not just a little. They're not going to go back, and they're going to say, you know, we only have 90% on record here. Do you guys have any idea where the other 10% went? They're going to go back and say, we have zero. What did you do? And they're scared. And they're scared for their own life. They've forgotten Shimon at this point, I think, as we're going to see in a few verses. They're scared for themselves. These are not noble heroes that are going to go back and rescue Shimon.
And each one has been implicated by God.
And each one is now implicated. Now, their father said to them, you've deprive me of my children. Joseph's no more. Shimon is no more. Now you want to take Benjamin? Everything's against me. He's ticked off.
Shimon's already a goner.
How can you go back, you know? If you guys go back, you'll just be thrown in jail. You know, I've got two gone. You want to take Benjamin? And he's kind of saying here, I almost don't care if you guys go back. But you're going to take Benjamin too? What a dysfunctional family.
But it's also saying something all the time about the favoritism of
yes.
Benjamin.
Yeah.
Which I think is...
And it's showing, well, favoritism was all through the story
through,
from the beginning.
Because Joseph was favorite.
From Joseph,
now Benjamin
absolutely.
Is the baby.
Yes. Now, let's go on because there's still one more characterization surprise coming. So, Reuben speaks up. You may put both of my sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Entrust him to my care, I will bring him back. Wow, and this isn't the one I was referring to yet, but imagine that kind of an oath. Put my sons to death. You know, if I don't bring Benjamin back, then you can put my sons to death. Right, that's what the grandfather's going to want to do?
Jephthah's daughter.
What a horrible predicament to be in as a family. And I don't say I'm sure glad my family isn't like that, because when people say those things, it doesn't work out well. But we do, each one of our families, we pray that we do not degenerate into this family right here.
Pretty sick value system.
Now, Jacob said, my son will not go down there with you. His brother is dead. He's the only one left. If harm comes to him on the journey you're taking, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in sorrow to Sheol. Now, the famine was still severe in the land. So when they had eaten all the grain they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, go back and buy us a little more food. Now, what did they do? Did they... Look, what does that say right there in that verse? Did they...
He's trusting the goodness of that leader, I guess.
Did they go back to rescue Shimon? They didn't.
No, they had to go back.
They left Shimon in jail and ate the food, hoping for a better turn of events. And when they ran out of food is when they remembered Shimon. It's kind of like, well, we're out of food again, and we're going to have to go down there, and Shimon is there, and we're... But they didn't do that. Between the end of the last chapter and this verse, they did not gather up and make the journey to rescue Shimon. They stayed in the land and ate up all the food. And I, to me, that's, it's comic. It's, it is so, it's so horrible. I mean, it puts them in such a bad light. Anyway, but they were afraid to go down. And as we've been saying all along, they know they're murderers. They've been accused of being spies. And when they go back, they're going to be thieves. So they're in trouble. They're in trouble like probably none of us have ever been in trouble. I mean, you just, this is...
And they've also let a brother go for the sake of what? For the sake of food.
Yes, so let's keep going, and because our time is really out,
yeah,
and we should at least finish reading this passage.
You mentioned the discourse feature for the students.
I did. That was back on the one, Ha'ehad. Wow. It's a characterization. Mm-hmm. It didn't use a name, but it was also a specification that was enough so that you could figure out, but it is treating them.
It ties up as well with this whole thing about they all.
And it's not interested in that person as who he was at that point, but it's representative of what he's going to do. It turns out he's representing all of them because they all end up with money in their bag. And I assume the others were probably in the bottom of the bag, and this guy had it up at the top of his bag so that he saw it. I don't know why the others didn't see it until they were with Joseph, unless it had been hidden by the Egyptians. So the Egyptians plop a bunch of silver at the bottom of some of the bags, and then with one of them, maybe the provision bag, they slip in one. I don't know.
Interesting you say he's representing all of them, and he's likely Levi, the line of the priesthood, representing them all.
Yeah, that's another interesting tie-in.
And it's also to do with the fact that if you think of it spiritually, the way the Lord goes on supplying, mm-hmm, in spite of all our sin until we've dealt with it.
He makes it rain on the just and the unjust, and
right,
these people are pretty unjust. Let's go on. The man, now Judah comes in. Judah says to him, remember Judah? Judah is the guy that brought the bloody garment. Judah's the guy that will run off, or maybe he's run off with Tamar already and his kids are in the process of growing up while this story takes place. But this is taking place before the Tamar story. Anyway, if you will send our brother along with us, we'll go down and buy food for you. He said, I skipped that line, you will not see my face unless your brother is with you. And so Judah says to his father, if you will send our brother along with us, we'll go down and buy food. If you will not send him, we will not go down. Because the man said to us, you will not see my face again unless your brother is with us. So now they draw the father in, and they recognize if they go down without the brother, it's a lost cause. They just go to jail and that's it, at least from their perspective. We cannot read that and say that's what Joseph would have done. We have no idea, but they don't know it's Joseph. So Israel asked, changes his name to Israel. Israel asked, why did you bring this trouble on me by telling the man you had another brother? And maybe by switching to Israel, it's the covenant name. Maybe we're supposed to be thinking about Israel as the Jacob is now thinking, well, at least I can preserve the promise with little Benjamin. you other riffraff, I don't know what God's going to do with you, but at least I've got Benjamin. Anyway. They replied, the man questioned us closely about ourselves and our family. Is your father still living? He asked us, do you have another brother? We simply answered his questions. How were we to know he would say, bring your brother down here? What?
Oh.
Yeah. So, then Judah said to Israel, his father, and so now we're going to get another change, a little change of character perspective here, because it doesn't just say Israel, it says Israel, his father, and so we are now supposed to pause and reorient our view of these characters. Send the boy along with me, and we will go at once, so that we and you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me personally responsible for him. If I do not bring him back and set him here before you, I will bear the blame before you all my life. That's maybe a little more reasonable than Reuben's. As it is, if we had not delayed, we could have gone and returned twice. And that's a little, I tried to think through. Okay, if it's 2 weeks one way, you go down 2 weeks, you come back 2 weeks. It's basically a month every time. So we could have done this twice. Now,
they could have all agreed in 2 months.
Well, that's the thing is, or did he mean we could have gone down, gotten some grain? No, that wouldn't make sense.
It takes much longer. I mean, if your speculation about 2 weeks is right, so you go down and it takes 2 weeks, by the time you've got whatever grain organized and you're coming back again, at least 2 weeks to get yourself together, and then you've got to come back again.
You think?
Oh, I'm sure.
For a month, yeah.
I would say it's a
okay, make it 3 months. What?
They're just going to fight. Judah, his father says to him, starts blaming him for, why did you give him this information? Like, way late in the story, why did you give him this information? And then Judah just says to him, he's doing blaming, and then so he's got a certain comment on
the end. That's true.
Yeah.
It's also passing blame. And that goes back to the thing, well, you know, we just stayed here and we just let this all fester. And anyway, so the father says, if it must be, do this, put some of the best products in your bag, take them down to the man as a gift, a little balm, a little honey, some spices and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. Look at what's there. You know, it says there's a famine, so they have nuts. There are certain, even in a famine, you will have some thing. The trees will still be giving forth fruit because they're sucking up moisture from deep down. They would probably have some dates. They had honey. They had, they had some nuts. So they were staying alive, but it was severe. They were feeling like they were starving, but they were staying alive. Anyway, take double the amount of silver with you, for you must return the silver that was in the mouths of your bags. Now here it says mouths of the bag. So that's what I didn't understand. How could it all have been in the mouth of their bag and only one of them finds it on the journey?
Well, presumably you eat one bag at a time. They're on a trip for 2 weeks.
Ah, okay.
So you one guy finds it when he wants to get some food out, whatever.
Okay, if they just...
And then they don't open the rest of the bags till they get back home.
And if it was just below the mouth somehow, hidden a bit. Anyway, he says, perhaps it was a mistake. Take your brother also and go back to the man at once. And may God give you mercy. Oh, that's for next week. So...
Do you have a closing thought on compassion? You talked about Joseph's levels of compassion. He provided rain.
Well, Joseph had compassion. He did step out of the picture and let the sin eat at them. He didn't resolve some of their guilt. He let their guilt remain because they were not repentant. They weren't repentant, so he let them stew. He let them simmer in the hot soup they were in. Very interesting. Jacob, Israel, didn't send them back at all. In fact, he wasn't going to send them back for Shimon. he was going to, the father was just going to hold on to Benjamin until they finally said, no, no way, we must go back and we can't go back without him. And this is just...
But it's still going back for food. It's not going back to rescue the brother.
No, they're going back for food, but of course they think they will be getting their brother back, or they're hoping maybe. They're hoping, because when somebody's in prison in antiquity, they didn't have the Red Cross and the civil rights lawyers and other... It was pretty dismal. If some of you have seen Ben-Hur, of course, and you remember he goes to visit, and this is during the Roman occupation of the land, and his mother and Ben-Hur's mother and sister had been put in prison, and he goes to visit them, and they become lepers. And, you know, their people got sick. It's dark, it's moldy, it's damp, the food is rotten. They were not treated with any kind of dignity at all. And so when you go back 3 months later, you have no idea what you're going to find with your brother. So we've run out of time, but all I can say is this is a very disturbing story, and I think that answers the question. Shall we take a break for a month?
Yeah.
My answer is no.
Oh,
you want a break?
But if you're game to go on, are you here for the next
week? I want to go. How can we? I'm here 3 months. We're going to leave Joseph. We're going to leave Simeon in prison. And
oh, no, we go on. Okay.
How can we leave him in prison? Goodness. So I'm for continuing on next week.
Okay.
Yes, I second that notion.
Okay, we go on.
So.
Yeah, we'll take notes.
Okay, so we're gonna meet again next week, and with that we're going to say Shabbat Shalom. And just remember, this was a very disturbing story, but while you carry this disturbing story, you all know that God works things together for good. This is not the end of the story. We're just in the middle. But so far, it's more disturbing than we would want to think about.
He ends up by
okay. I don't know how to turn this off.
Yeah. Just want to make sure. I just want fearing God affects us.